U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut chairs the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. He's looking into the two assassination attempts on former President Donald Trump. He says their preliminary report on the first incident will soon be released. And it's critical of the Secret Service and its parent agency, the Department of Homeland Security.
I think the American people are also going to be deeply disappointed in the Department of Homeland Security, not just in the lapses in performance, but also in its resistance to providing information.
Blumenthal says the report will recommend that the Secret Service devote more resources for the protection of presidential candidates and not just office holders. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Suffolk DA wants the public to help identify a Gilgo murder victim. Americans are expected to spend big money on sports betting this year. Test results show New York students continue to fall behind in English and math. And why did Connecticut pull out of a multi-state offshore wind deal? Those stories and more are ahead. I'm Sabrina Garone. Investigators have released updated sketches of an Asian male victim whose body was found along Ocean Parkway 13 years ago. The Suffolk County District Attorney is asking the public to help identify that man. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio has more.
He was found dressed in women's clothing, according to police. DA Ray Tierney says that's why the new images show what he might have looked like with both short and long hair. Tierney says the victim was between 17 and 23 years old, and his ethnicity is likely Southern Chinese.
Unfortunately, South Asia is underrepresented in our genealogy databases, meaning there are not a lot of Asian profiles in the database. Therefore, investigative genetic genealogy in this instance is a challenge.
Tierney would not directly link suspected serial killer Rex Huerman to the Asian male, although his remains were found in the same area as Huerman's alleged victims. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
As the fall sports season heats up, sports betting is on the rise too. Americans are expected to spend more than $150 billion on wagers this year. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports.
Sports betting has only been legal in the United States outside of Nevada since 2018. Billions of dollars have been spent on wagers since then. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut says there should be more protections for gamblers.
The gambling industry this year alone will grow by 30%, from about $26 billion in sports betting to $35 billion. That's according to the American Gaming Association, the industry itself. And in the wake of that growth are tens of thousands of people whose lives have been destroyed.
Blumenthal has introduced a bill that would regulate the company's advertising and AI algorithms. He says it's in an attempt to make sports betting less addictive. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
The latest test results released by the New York State Department of Education shows low scores in English, math, and science. WSHU's Shelley Hassman-Kadish reports.
According to the preliminary report, less than half of students tested in grades 3 through 8 showed proficiency in English in 2024, down from 2023. The report shows 52% of students tested at proficient or above in math, same as last year. In science, 35% of students scored proficient or better this year. The annual tests are required by the federal government and are used as one measurement of how well students are mastering learning standards, according to the Education Department's website. According to Newsday, the state will release a breakdown for local districts and schools in November. Shelley Hassman-Kadish, WSHU News.
Connecticut recently pulled out of a three-state offshore wind energy buy with Massachusetts and Rhode Island. That story is coming up in just a bit. First, a message from our supporter.
Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare. the only health system in the Northeast with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthcare.org.
According to U.S. Census data released last week, Long Island has a higher percentage of homeowners who are cost burdened by the price of housing than either the national or state average. Almost 44% of homeowners with a mortgage were paying more than 30% of their income on housing, and 53% of renters on the island were also considered cost burdened. New Haven's public school system has fired its IT director after hackers stole more than $6 million from the schools. The director told the New Haven Independent she was wrongfully dismissed. A security consultant hired by the district called the hack among the worst he'd ever seen. A Fairfield County nonprofit is debuting a second mobile food pantry in Stamford, making one of the four food pantries they operate across the county. Nancy Coughlin is with Person to Person. She says people can help the nonprofit by donating food or money.
In our food pantries, for example, we give away food that is donated through food drives and is rescued through food rescue. But when we're not able to secure food that's donated in order to give to people, we purchase food. So with every dollar donated, we can purchase $5 worth of food.
Coughlin says the mobile pantry will include eggs, meat, fresh fruit, and other foods people can use to make healthy meals. Person to Person also helps people with jobs, clothing, and housing opportunities. Connecticut recently pulled out of a three-state offshore wind energy buy with Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Is a recent focus on the state's high electricity costs to blame for that? WSHU's Ebong Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's Jen Ellen Spiegel to discuss her in-depth reporting on this. It's part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island have been at the forefront of the push to create New England's biggest and most innovative offshore wind initiatives. So, Jan, why was Connecticut missing when Massachusetts and Rhode Island announced their latest round of projects a couple of weeks ago?
Well, if you want to take the governor, Governor Ned Lamont, at his word, the issue was the cost. And there are certain arguments to be made for what it would cost at this juncture. He is also very aware and has said to the Mirror that he doesn't want to add to the burden on people's electric bills. You can posit why he doesn't want to add to that burden at this particular time, a couple of months before an election, but cost is not inconsiderable. And you also have to remember that these are long-term contracts, so whatever cost, whatever the price is that the state gets in, they're going to be stuck with for a while. You could also make the argument, well, look, we think the Federal Reserve is about to lower interest rates, which might help on that score. That said, this was structured to be a three-state initiative. So you could get economies of scale. If you had large projects, they could get bid a little bit lower. Will Connecticut come in at a later point? Maybe. Will it make life problematic for the other states between now and whenever they get in? Maybe. On the other hand, these projects take a while. And say Connecticut clocked in towards the end of the year, it probably wouldn't slow anything down considerably.
Okay, so for political contingency with an election a couple of months away, it might be better to put it off and deal with it after. But Massachusetts and Rhode Island went ahead. If Connecticut stays out, it's going to raise the cost for Massachusetts and Rhode Island, would it not? Because basically what's going to happen is that if they don't have customers for the power they're producing, the project is no longer viable. Isn't that what the situation is right now? That's why they need all the three states to commit to buying the energy they produce.
It depends on the project you're talking about. There are a number of projects that are involved in this latest solicitation, and some of them are completely taken by Massachusetts and Rhode Island. One of them, however, is not. It's a project that's now called Vineyard Wind 2. It's a 1,200 megawatt project. Massachusetts has opted for 800 megawatts of that, which leaves 400 megawatts left. Will that project still be viable if no one decides to purchase those 400? Well, the developer, which is a company called Vineyard Offshore, says no, they can't do it without everybody involved. Well, there's a certain amount of pressure on Connecticut to get with the program and pick up those other 400. There, you know, Massachusetts could decide to pick it up. Little less likely that Rhode Island will. It's a much smaller state, and it already has quite a bit of offshore wind. That said, could Connecticut wait a few months and do it? Yeah, it's entirely possible, but everybody's a little nervous at this point. And the whole, as you said, the whole point of doing this was to make it more cost effective. And by Connecticut sitting out, especially on that one project, it could cause a problem. There's also a couple other projects that are hanging out there that got, at this point, no takers.
Wow. But you know, at the New England governor's meeting in Boston, the Massachusetts governor, Healey, she said that all the states are still involved. Connecticut is still involved. Do you have any idea what that meant, that Connecticut was still involved? And talking to the governor himself, he seems to feel that this is something he can deal with later, but he doesn't seem to be committed.
The whole idea of doing this three-state solicitation, I'm not going to say whose great idea it was, but it may well have been Connecticut's. The Department of Energy Environmental Commissioner Katie Dykes has for years now, even before she was actually the commissioner and was just handling the energy component of DEP, she's been out in the forefront for a long time looking to do multi-state solicitations and operations of all sorts. So you got to think that she was behind putting this whole thing together in the first place. It's hard to know where things are. I think you need to take that meeting in Boston, though, with a bit of a grain of salt. That was the 45th annual meeting of this kind of thing, and not much typically comes out of them. It also involves Canada and whatnot. You got to look at it, I think, also from a legislative standpoint, where some of these guys running for office have really made keeping electricity rates low a big part of what their campaign push is. We have had, I don't want to say daily, but, you know, many press releases every week from especially Republicans who are making this a big, it would seem, election issue. Plenty of Democrats are also on board with keeping electric rates low. How do you do that at this point? People view offshore wind as being an expense.
Oh, thank you so much. Jan Ellen Spiegel is Connecticut Mirror's regular freelance environment and energy reporter. I'm Ebong Udama.
Thank you for listening to After All Things, supported by Hartford HealthCare. For all the latest news from around the sound, listen on the radio, stream online at WSHU.org, or download the WSHU app, which is where you can get all of WSHU's great podcasts, including this one and Long Story Short. Your vote matters, and so do your questions. What do you need to know to make an informed decision at the polls this year? While we're listening to what you want from your election news, let us know at WSHU.org under the Elections tab to help shape our reporting. I'm Sabrina Garone. Enjoy the rest of your day. I will speak to you tomorrow.